Okay, let's dive into the stack of sources you've brought us. Today, we're really digging into something, well, fundamental. Reading faces.
Yeah, it's something we do constantly, right? Often without even thinking about it.
Exactly. And it's amazing how much info is just packed in there,
yeah.
Non-verbally.
Our faces are like personal billboards, just broadcasting all the time.
They really are. And, you know, the core idea here, it reminds me of that Shakespeare quote from Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. Which one?
Your face, my Thane, is as a book where men may read strange matters.
That nails it. Your face as a book.
That's pretty much what this deep dive is about, isn't it? Trying to understand that language written on our faces.
And the sources, they really emphasize that the face isn't just, like, passive. It's seen as this living history, almost.
A history? How's it so?
Like a reservoir of your individual experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and this is key, a major source of stereotypes.
The stereotypes, right.
Yeah, and these really influence how we interact. We lean on facial cues so heavily for those quick assessments,
yeah.
You know.
The ultimate snap judgment machine, basically.
Pretty much.
So let's start with something really basic. Facial shapes, just the structure itself. The sources say that alone can trigger stereotypes.
It's right there in the material. Things like a high forehead often gets stereotyped as meaning intelligence.
Okay.
Or pouty lips linked to sexiness. Thin lips are often seen as more serious. And people who are just generally more facially expressive, they tend to get pegged as more confident, more likable, maybe more extroverted.
So others are reading stuff into your face shape. But it goes both ways, right? The sources mentioned it affects the person with the face, too.
That's a really fascinating angle.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's research mentioned finding that people with wider faces, for instance, tend to display more aggressiveness.
Really?
Aggressive.
Yeah, they even give a specific example. Ice hockey players.
Wow. Okay. That makes it concrete. And, well, beyond stereotypes, face shape obviously plays a big role in just attractiveness judgments. Absolutely. That comes up again and again. Symmetrical faces. Pretty consistently judged as more attractive.
Uh-huh.
And conversely, something like a smaller or maybe weaker chin is often associated with shyness and perceived as less attractive.
Okay. So that's the static shape. Let's shift to something more dynamic facial positions. This is where you get those common sayings.
Okay? Oh, definitely. Think about phrases we use all the time like, keep your chin up.
Yeah. What's the nonverbal meaning there?
Well, the sources break it down as signaling optimism, hopefulness, or keep a stiff upper lip.
That one's about toughness, right? Fortitude.
Exactly. Fortitude, self-restraint, getting through something tough.
And if someone says you have a level head,
that means you stay calm, you're unflappable. It's amazing how these physical postures just became shorthand for internal states.
It really is, and you can kind of feel it yourself, can't you?
Yeah, the sources actually ask you, the listener, that directly. Which position makes you feel better? You know, lowering your chin, maybe lowering your gaze, that can go along with feeling down. But lifting your chin, looking up, that often signals confidence, alertness. Just changing that physical position can shift how you feel and how others see you.
That mind-body connection is so powerful. Okay, now let's zoom in on maybe the most universal expression, the smile.
Ah, the smile, yeah. It's described as like the face's main invitation.
An invitation.
An invitation to share feelings. It's just one of the most common and, you could argue, most significant nonverbal cues we have.
And the message seems pretty straightforward, usually. A more positive, friendly smile makes people think better of you.
Generally, yeah. They see you as nicer. They feel more comfortable. Just changes the whole vibe, doesn't it?
Totally.
And it also has this really practical function in conversation. It's like a back channel.
Back channel.
Yeah, it signals you're paying attention, you're interested, but without having to actually say anything and interrupt. It's that constant feedback loop.
But, you know, we've all seen a fake smile, a forced grin. That brings us to managing our expressions, right? What the sources call facial display rules.
Exactly. We're always doing this, consciously or not. Applying these rules, managing the broadcast. The sources lay out 5 main techniques.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's simulating. That's when you express a feeling, say happiness, when you actually feel nothing, you're just acting.
Got it. Putting on a show.
Then intensifying, showing more feeling than you really have, you know, really amping it up. Neutralizing is the opposite, trying to give the impression of no feeling, even when you do, like a poker face.
Right, the poker face.
De-intensifying. This is revealing less, showing less facial movement, expressing less feeling than you actually have, dialing it back.
Okay.
And finally, masking. covering up one feeling you do have by expressing a totally different one you don't feel, like hiding annoyance behind a polite smile.
So we're all kind of like mini facial directors tweaking the output. Totally. And that leads to different styles, right? Underlying tendencies. The sources called them facial styles.
Yeah, and it's pretty revealing to think about these types. You might ask yourself, which one sounds like me?
Okay, lay them out for us.
All right. There's a withholder. This person just naturally shows very few expressions. They almost inhibit emotion physically.
Keeps it all in.
Then the revealer, the total opposite. Their feelings just seem to spill out. It's all right there on their face.
Okay. The open book.
The unwitting expressor. Okay. Now, this person thinks they're hiding their feelings, but their face totally gives them away. And they're often surprised when they find out.
That's awkward.
Then the blank expressor. They believe they're showing emotion, but to other people, their face just looks, well, blank. It can be frustrating for others.
I can imagine.
The substitute expressor. They show emotion all right, but it's the wrong one. Like showing anger when they're actually feeling hurt or sad.
A mismatch.
And lastly, the frozen affect expressor. Their face seems to have a permanent emotional look, maybe sad or angry, sometimes for physical reasons, like muscle tone.
Wow, that's a lot of variation. It just shows how complicated it is, both expressing ourselves and reading others accurately.
Absolutely. We're constantly trying to control our faces, using these techniques, you know, monitoring how we look, adjusting based on how we want to come across.
It's this whole layer of self-presentation.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to reading other people's faces, the sources mention pioneers like Ekman and Friesen.
Yeah, their work is foundational. They basically point out that we decode emotions by looking at specific areas or regions of the face where the cues tend to show up.
And there are tools for this now, like FAST and FMST.
Right. Tools developed to help categorize expressions and figure out their meaning to make sense of it all.
The sources also broke down facial cues into different types based on how permanent they are, which I thought was useful.
Yeah, that's a helpful distinction. You've got the static facial cues.
Like bone structure?
Exactly. Bone structure, skin color, the basic shape of your lips. Stuff that's relatively permanent. Just there.
Okay.
Then the slow facial cues. These change, but gradually, over time. Think skin texture, wrinkles appearing, maybe subtle changes in lip size over years.
Right, things that develop.
And finally, the rapid signals. This is the fast stuff, the language of emotion, those quick changes, the fleeting expressions that tell you how someone's feeling right now.
Static, slow, and rapid. Got it. That distinction helps sort things out. Oh, and the sources brought up that interesting cultural difference, face in focus.
Ah, yeah, that was really interesting. It noted that in places like the U.S., often the focus when, say, assessing someone might start with the body first, then the face.
They use the beautiful girl image example.
Right. And contrasted that with many Asian cultures where the primary focus is really on the face itself, often with an emphasis on like the purity of the skin.
So culture even shapes where we look first.
Seems like it. Yeah. It's a key part of perception.
Definitely. Okay. Let's zoom right in now. Specific features, starting with the big one, the eyes, often called the windows to the soul, right?
And the sources really back that up. They position the eyes as incredibly revealing, maybe broadcasting what's inside more directly than anything else.
They do so much. They can grab attention, show concern, or lack of it.
Signal disapproval, establish dominance.
Create closeness or distance. It's all in the gaze.
Yeah, just think about the difference between increased gaze looking someone in the eye, which usually signals liking, friendliness, maybe attraction.
Versus looking away.
Right, averting the gaze.
Yeah.
That can signal disinterest, hostility, dislike. It's a powerful switch.
And eye gaze is just crucial in almost every relationship, isn't it? Personal, professional.
Absolutely. And in U.S. culture, that sustained eye contact is often read as being direct, honest, making a real connection.
The sources broke down gazing into four specific functions. What were those again?
Okay, first, regulatory. Using your eyes to manage the conversation flow.
Like signaling terms.
Exactly. Making eye contact when you want to speak, looking away when you're done. Turn-taking signals.
Okay, one.
Second, monitoring. We use our eyes to check how the other person is responding, getting that constant feedback. Are they getting it? Do they agree?
Makes sense. Two.
Third, cognitive. This is interesting. Sometimes we use our eyes to help us think. You know how people look away or up or even close their eyes when processing something complex?
Yeah, I do that.
That's the cognitive function. And fourth, expressive. This is about using gaze to show how involved you are, your emotional state, the nature of the relationship, just through how and when you look.
Wow. It all fits. Eye contact really seems to help process feelings between people.
And the flip side, the source has noted, is that denied eye contact can even be linked to feelings of depression or isolation.
That's heavy. We have so many phrases too, don't we? The evil eye, shifty eyes.
Seeing eye to eye, sustained eye contact, our language is soaked in eye metaphors.
And it's a key tool for regulating that conversation flow, opening and closing channels, giving those turn signals.
Even blinking gets a mention. Rapid blinking might mean nervousness. A slow blink could be flirtatious or even unfriendly, depending on the context.
Subtle stuff. And they touched briefly on that NLP idea that eye movements relate to thought processes.
Yeah, just a brief mention that the concept exists that where you look might indicate how you're thinking.
Okay, moving up the face a bit. The eyebrows, they seem small, but they definitely speak.
Oh, they do. Raising both brows, that adds serious emphasis to whatever you're saying.
Like, really?
Exactly. And raised eyebrows are also the classic look of confusion or surprise.
And the single raised brow, the Spock brow.
Huh. Yeah, that's pretty much universally read as doubt. Skepticism. And the sources make a little side note.
Yeah.
Liars know this. They're often aware of what their eyebrows might give away.
Good tip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up. The mouth and jaw. Huge sources of information.
Totally. It's a natural focal point when someone's talking, right? And tiny movements tell you a lot about how they're feeling. The sources list a few key ones.
Like what?
Lips turning down or up. Pretty direct signal for feeling down or happy.
Simple enough.
Lips pressed or smashed together tightly. Often signals anger, stress, tension.
Okay.
Pursing your lips.
Yeah.
That's described as maybe confusing or thoughtful, like you're considering something. Lower lips slightly pushed out over the upper. That's classic pouting.
Right.
And that one side up, the other down, that's the sneer. Contempt.
It's amazing how specific these are. Even the tongue gets mentioned.
Yep. Sticking your tongue out can mean so many things depending on context. Rudeness, disgust, playfulness.
Yeah.
Even sexual provocation. It's versatile.
Mm, okay. And the jaw.
Provides signals too.
Mm.
A clenched jaw, especially with pursed lips. Clear sign of tension, hostility, maybe anger.
Right. You can almost feel that tension.
But a drop jaw. That's the universal sign of surprise, shock, maybe fear, or just confusion. The mouth literally falls open.
Okay, let's loop back to the smile again, because the sources went into more detail later, right? Mm-hmm. Including that thing parents say, put on a happy face. Why do we say that?
Well, partly it's encouragement, right?
Yeah.
To try and feel happier or be brave. But also, and this is key, because smiling actually works on other people.
How so?
It produces positive responses.
Yeah.
Your smile directly influences how others feel about you and react to you.
So a genuine smile puts people at ease, signals you're friendly.
Exactly. Signals no threat, helps reduce tension, makes things more comfortable.
And they gave the technical term for the genuine one, the zygomatic smile.
That's the one. It involves specific muscles. Lips pull up, yeah, but you also often see crinkling around the nose. Nostrils might flare a bit. And crucially, the eye muscles engage. You get those crow's feet.
Ah, the eye crinkles. That's the giveaway for a real smile.
Often, yeah. It's a whole face thing, not just the mouth.
And they listed different types of smiles, too, beyond just real or fake.
Right. There was the tight-lipped smile, lips stretched, teeth hidden, kind of polite, maybe reserved.
Yeah.
The twisted smile, different emotion on each side, often reads as sarcastic or showing mixed feelings.
This is the half smile, half smirk.
Kinda. Then the drop jaw smile, maybe indicating surprise with a smile. Mm-hmm. The sideways looking up, turn away smile. Often seen as shy, coy, or playful.
Right.
And just the full smile, the big open one.
Lots of smiles. And they mentioned gender differences.
Yeah. A finding that women tend to smile more than men in many social situations. Apparently, even when they're feeling stressed.
Interesting. And worth remembering, too, the physical benefits. Smiling and laughing are actually good for you physiologically.
Definitely a bonus. Okay, last feature. The nose.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't think it, but the sources say even the nose speaks a language.
The nose? How?
Well, think about nostrils flaring. The sources say this happens with negative emotions. Sadness, anger, disgust, shock. It reflects upset.
Okay.
But it also happens when you get good news or you're surprised or excited. So it seems to reflect heightened emotion generally, whether negative upset or positive excitement.
Hmm. Both sides of the coin.
And subtle things like touching or rubbing your nose can be potential signs of discomfort, maybe even deception sometimes.
The nose touched, yeah. Like covering the mouth slightly.
Could be related. Interestingly, they also suggest that touching your own nose can sometimes be like a self-calming thing, a little subconscious comfort gesture.
Wow. Okay. So when you really put all this together, The static features, the slow changes, the rapid-fire expressions, the positions, the eyes, brows, mouth, nose.
Yeah.
Our faces are just constantly telling these incredibly complex stories, aren't they?
They really are. These sources just hammer home the sheer breadth of information our faces convey. It shapes first impressions, it influences our relationships, it dictates the whole rhythm of conversation.
It definitely makes you look at interactions differently. Thinking about how much your faces are broadcasting, maybe stuff we don't even realize.
Yeah.
What does that really mean for understanding other people, you know, beyond just their words, and maybe more pointedly for you listening? How might paying just a bit more attention to these facial cues change your next conversation, both in what you pick up from others and maybe what you realize you're putting out there yourself?